It's time for CBJ in 30, presented by Telhio Credit Union. Find us on SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play Music, YouTube, and TuneIn. The easiest thing to do is tell Alexa or Siri to play CBJ in 30. Here's your host, Bob McGilligan.
All I want for Christmas is a real good tan. Take me to the islands, put my feet in the sand. Rocking to and fro with the rhythm of the ocean. Sing a silent night with the palm trees a-blowing. Ooh, don't you think it's a pretty good plan? All I want for Christmas is a real good tan.
The Blue Jackets are headed to Florida, where tomorrow they will take on the Panthers. And when they get there, they'll be trying to snap a three-game losing streak. Welcome to CBJ in 30, presented by Telhio Credit Union. Coming up in just a bit, I'll talk with George Richards, who covers the Florida Panthers for The Athletic out of Miami. And we'll talk about Sergei Bobrovsky and a whole bunch of other stuff as the Blue Jackets prepare for that game. Last night, not a good one for the Blue Jackets. Well, it certainly looked like it was going to be good when it started, that game at Nationwide Arena against the New York Rangers. It was the first time the Blue Jackets got to see Artemi Panarin in a Rangers uniform. So that was last night. Tomorrow night, they'll see Sergei Bobrovsky, the two key free agents that left this past summer and went on to what they feel are greener pastures. For Panarin, it certainly was last night. The Blue Jackets got a 1-0 lead when Cam Atkinson scored his fifth goal of the year. It was a nice play by Nick Foligno, bringing the puck in, settling a puck down, and bringing kind of a bouncing puck in over the blue line, finding a way to pass it across to Cam Atkinson, who scored 5-hole to give the Blue Jackets a 1-0 lead. But the Blue Jackets continue to be plagued by goals that are scored in the final minute of periods. And that was the case. With 8 seconds left in the first period, the Blue Jackets a little bit lackluster in their own zone. They didn't go hard after the puck to clear it out, and the Rangers took full advantage as Brendan Lemieux scored to make it a 1-1 game. In the second period, the Rangers got two more goals. And the third goal that they scored was by Artemi Panarin, who they were doing a good job of keeping pretty quiet on the night. And then all of a sudden, Panarin was standing in the left wing circle. The Rangers wound up with an odd man advantage, a 2-on-1 down low right near the net, and made the pass to Panarin, who buried the puck to make it 3-1. That was significant because the Blue Jackets got one of those goals back in the third period when Seth Jones was able to score, and it was the 3-2 game. The Blue Jackets never got any closer than that, and a good reason for that is Alexander Georgiev, the starting goaltender for the New York Rangers last night, was exceptional. He made at least three highlight reel saves. They were saves that were not only big and flashy, but they came at just the right time to keep the Blue Jackets from getting the game tied and preventing them from going to overtime and at least earning a point last night. So that was the story. And the other story was the Blue Jackets just could not bury it behind Georgiev. They hit posts. They hit, they hit three posts and a crossbar last night. Also, how about a couple of shots, if you will, that didn't even touch the net from Emil Bemström? Bemström had been a healthy scratch on Tuesday against the Arizona Coyotes. He got back in the game last night. Three different times he was close to the net, was trying to either redirect a puck or shoot a puck himself, and three times he was unsuccessful in getting the puck on net. And that is frustrating, especially for a guy who came over from Europe and was being billed or has been billed as a pure scorer. And I'm not saying that somewhere down the line we're not going to see that from Emil Bemström. I'm not saying that he's not going to develop into that as his National Hockey League career continues here in the future. But what I am going to say is right now he is just as snake-bitten as just about anybody else, and just can't capitalize in those situations. Josh Anderson last night at one point had 7 shots and nothing to show for the 7 shots. But I thought by far the Blue Jackets' best player in the game, hands down. This is going to come as such a joy to so many of you who texted me, or rather tweeted me, week in and week out on the Monday mailbags asking, why doesn't Sonny Milano get more time? Why isn't Sonny playing? Why doesn't Sonny get a bigger role? Why is Sonny being basically banished to a corner instead of being put right in the forefront? Well, Sonny Milano was, I thought, the Blue Jackets' best player last night. Just everything that he did, he showed up all over the place. He was carrying the puck well. He was making small defensive plays well. It was not just the offense. I mean, he showed up big time when it came to the offense, but I thought it was an overall good performance by Sonny in last night's game. And, you know, it's unfortunate that, you know, he doesn't wind up with a goal. It was one of those nights where I thought he worked hard enough to get a goal. He was giving the puck to other people. He was setting people up. He did it all last night. He really did. I thought he did a really good job. And as I said, I think that he stood out. To me, he stood out as the best Blue Jacket on the ice last night. Josh Anderson was good. Again, we're talking about good without any goals coming from these people. But, yeah, Sonny was terrific. I thought he was terrific last night. But, again, at the end of the night, it wasn't good enough. The Blue Jackets lose for a third straight game. That was a game where they started the night 3 points behind the New York Rangers in the Metropolitan Division. It was a very winnable game for the Blue Jackets. They didn't get it done. And now they're going on the road for the next four games. After this game tomorrow night in Florida, the Blue Jackets move on to Washington, D.C. on Monday. Next Thursday, they'll be in Pittsburgh. And next Saturday, they will be in Ottawa for an afternoon game. So the schedule begins to get a little bit grueling. The long homestand, or the big bunch of home games, because we were there and then gone for a game and then back again. Well, that stretch is over right now. So the Blue Jackets are going to have to do their work away from home. And last night they couldn't get it done at home. Maybe a road trip is just what the doctor ordered right now to get these guys away, get them together, and see if they can work through all of this, because there is still plenty to work through. After the game last night, Boone Jenner told this to me. Nick Foligno told this to a group of reporters. You know, they both said, we did some really good things in that game. And it's true. They did. They did really good things. But they didn't score. And that has been the bugaboo, except for a brief stretch there where they scored five goals in back-to-back games. They're back to finding it very hard to beat the opposing goaltender. And now tomorrow, the opposing goaltender is going to be a guy that they know very, very well, a guy that they shot on in practice for years, and a guy that's struggling, a guy that is struggling, and they need to find a way to take advantage of. I'll tell you more about that in just a few minutes when I'm joined by George Richards, who covers the Florida Panthers for The Athletic Miami. But right now I want to tell you about Telhio Credit Union. At Telhio Credit Union, they have so many services. First of all, they are a credit union, so you have to join a credit union. Well, why should you do that? Well, they've got the answers for you. And you can find the answer to that question and many more on their website at telhio.org. You can also look at all of the services that they have, checking accounts, savings accounts, whether it be personal, whether it be for your small business. If you're looking for a place to put your money where you're looking, when you're looking for a place to get the most out of your money, you have to look no further than Telhio Credit Union. And when you go to their website at telhio.org, you'll find about all of those services and much, much more right there. If you don't see what you're looking for, if you can't find the answer to your question, go to the right-hand side of the screen. There is a live chat option during regular business hours. Click on that, and somebody will help you right there through live chat on your screen. You can also stop by any of their local offices and talk to a real honest-to-goodness person about everything you'd like to know and about the services that they have. Any questions, they'll be happy to answer them for you. At Telhio Credit Union, which is open to everyone in Central and Southwestern Ohio and is federally insured by NCUA. My guest right now is a man that covered the Florida Panthers for a long time for the Miami Herald, and then he left, he came to Columbus, and then he went back to Florida. I'm joined right now by George Richards, who covers the Florida Panthers once again, this time for The Athletic. George, you're back in Miami. You were in Columbus briefly, 1 year. You left the Miami area. You came up, you wrote for the Columbus Dispatch. But it seems like when you had your first opportunity to get back to Miami, you went there so you could work for The Athletic. But what was that year like for you to come to Columbus in between stints covering the Panthers?
Yeah, it was. I mean, Columbus was great. I mean, I love it up there. I spent most of my summer this year up there, and I've been back since the summer. So, I mean, Columbus is like a second home to me. I was very fortunate that when the Miami Herald stopped covering the Panthers on a daily basis, I was able to get a job in Columbus with the Dispatch, a city I know very well. I've got family there, and it was just an easy transition. And it wasn't as easy coming back as you might have thought. I mean, it was really something I debated a lot, but to be able to work for the Athletic and come back home to Miami, you know, where I was born and raised, grew up, all that, it was just a decision I felt like I had to make. But leaving the Dispatch, leaving Columbus was a tough decision. I mean, it really was. But when you get a chance to go home, sometimes you just have to take it.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. And it sounds like you have the perfect setup now because, you know, Miami is where you want to be in the winter, and Columbus is okay in the summer.
Columbus in the summer is the best. It almost makes you forget about the winter. I mean, that was a rough – my 1 year in Columbus, that was a rough winter. And then summer came, and I was like, dude, this is awesome, you know, playing golf in 72-degree weather. It was awesome. But so I spent a lot of my downtime up there, in Lewis Center at my cousin's place, and have a good time there. And the Athletic sent me up to Cincinnati to cover the Bengals and Jaguars, so I said, I'll do it, but I need to spend a couple days in Columbus on the back end. And they said, sure, go ahead. So that was nice as well.
Well, and you were here for that year. It was a pretty good time for this franchise, as it was just starting to come into its own and, you know, in the middle of that three straight runs to the playoffs for this team. But, you know, it's a little bit different here now, and part of that is because of some of the guys that have left via free agency, and you work with one of those guys again on an everyday basis right now, and that is Sergei Bobrovsky. Sergei goes down to Florida. He makes a ton of money, gets a big long contract, makes a whole bunch of money to go there, and yet as we get ready for this game that is coming up tomorrow night, Sergei Bobrovsky has been out the last two games and is waiting for his opportunity to get back into the net. Now, I read your story earlier in the week, and I saw that Bob is just playing this off as one of these stretches, and we saw these the last couple of years, one of these stretches where he just takes extra practice time to work on some things. Is he 100% honest? I don't mean that he's lying, but is there any more to it than that is what my question.
I don't think so. I think that, you know, the game in Washington just before Thanksgiving, the Panthers had Washington hemmed in pretty good. The Capitals, the high-flying Capitals, only get 20 shots on goal, yet they score four goals. And afterwards, you know, Joe Quenneville wasn't real happy. He's like, listen, a couple saves here and there, and we win this game. Instead, the Panthers, you know, lose their third straight. They lose that game 4-3. And in the next game out, against the Nashville Predators to kick off a 9-game homestand, it's Chris Driger in net instead of Bob. And the message was clear. It was like, you know, Bob's got to be better. You look at these statistics. While the Panthers really aren't that concerned, the numbers don't look good. Florida's defense, for the most part, has not been very good. So, it's been an adjustment, I think, for Bob. And in just playing in front of this, you know, behind this Florida defense where they're not as structured perhaps as he's used to in Columbus, where, you know, the forwards play as good defensively as the defensemen do. In Florida, the defensemen are more like forwards for the most part. So it's definitely an adjustment. But again, going back to your point, so he doesn't play against Nashville. The Panthers play their best defensive game of the year. I think Nashville got like three scoring chances all night. Chris Driger making his first NHL start at the age of 25 gets a shutout. You knew right then and there it's going to be two games on the bench for Sergei Bobrovsky because you're just not going to pull a kid who pitches a shutout. And Bob understood that. So being benched for two games was more circumstance than anything else.
Well, and you talked about the numbers. When you look at the numbers, Bobrovsky, a goals against average of 3.48 coming into this start, 884 save percentage. Of course, those are numbers that are far below what everybody in Florida had hoped they would be at any time of the season, right?
At any time, yeah. And we thought, you know, after the month of October, those numbers were going to start climbing up. And they have a little bit. But still, I mean, it's really hard to find Sergei Bobrovsky on the NHL stat sheet. I mean, his .884 save percentage is ranked 62nd. His .348 is ranked, you know, not much above that. So the statistically, it's been ugly. But I'm telling you right now, I mean, some of the saves he makes for this team, the Panthers haven't seen in a long time, and he has kept this team in games. You know, that Washington game wasn't one of his best. It wasn't one of his worst either. He's had a couple games where you could say, yeah, that was on Bob. But for the most part, I think his goaltending has been fine. But we are now past the quarter point of the season, and maybe you do start to look at these numbers and say, well, how much further can they go up? Now, we've seen him, right, Bob, in February, March, April, just be dominant. And I think the Panthers are hoping for that side of Bob to show up sooner rather than later.
Talk with George Richards. He covers the Florida Panthers for The Athletic. And it's funny. Yes, we have seen him like that before. There's no question about it. He goes through, I would say, one or two spurts during the year where he kind of gets off track. But there were two things that you were talking about there. Number one is Quenneville making the comment, and I saw that comment that he made after that game against Washington where he said, you know, if we get a couple of saves there, we win the game. You know, Sergei has not taken kindly to those kind of comments in the past. As a matter of fact, you know, there's a lot of speculation to the Blue Jackets talking about his playoff performances that actually got him to the spot where he was ready to leave for free agency. So I saw that, and I know Quenneville, of course, a very veteran coach, and he's right, but I just was wondering, how's Bob going to take that? And the other thing is, it was against Washington. And George, in the year that you were here, you saw Bob play. There are just certain teams that he does struggle against. And I think Pittsburgh and Washington are they're the top two on the list.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I think you look at that Pittsburgh series in 2017, right? Or 2018. Yeah, whatever it was, when they were up 2-0. They won the first two games in Washington, and Bob was on. And then, you know, they've got, you know, they're a – you know, an open net from red to win game three, and it goes to double overtime and they lose. And then Washington, we know what happens. Washington wins the next three and takes the series 4-2. And afterwards, Bob, first thing, you know, after the series is over, he brings up the whole sports psychologist thing. He goes, I don't think I need to see one this year, you know, because he played well enough, you know, in that series. I mean, they just didn't close the door on the Capitals, and you know, turned out to do pretty well for the Capitals that year. They win the cup, but I don't think he took, you know, Joel Quinn, because it wasn't even scathing comments by Joel Quinville. They were just like, yeah, you know what, and Bob even said it after the game, there were a couple that he let in that you would like to have back, so he kind of knew. And maybe just sitting out the Saturday game was kind of a refresh and kind of reset things. And then it turned into two games. But that said, you know, I talked to him Tuesday after the morning skate, and he was just like, you know what, I'm trying to get back to where I was. I'm trying to use this time as maybe – it may be a mini training camp. I mean, today he was working with the goalie coach in one corner, just going through his motions. You know how technical he is. And if one little thing is off with Sergei, it kind of messes up the whole thing. So I think he's just trying to get back to his routine, get back to doing what he does. And, you know, we'll see Saturday night when the Blue Jackets come to town, whether it was beneficial or not.
You know, and as I'm looking at the numbers and not just what he's done, but you're on the second backup goaltender there already this season and bringing in a young guy to handle the job right now. So the Blue Jackets and the Panthers are actually pretty similar in that situation because Jonas Korpisalo has been fine here. I don't think he's been a problem whatsoever. He's establishing himself as a starting goaltender, but they've gotten 0 points when Korpisalo has not played in net, and the Panthers were looking at a similar situation, and that's why they made a move last week, isn't it?
Yeah, that and you know, they had a young kid, Sam Montembeau, basically a rookie. Last year was the first time he saw any NHL action, and it came at the end of the last year. And when they knew that they were going to sign Bob, they had to go cheap on the backup, because you're spending $10 million on a goalie. You're not going to spend $4 million, $3 million on a backup or anything like that. So, and they had faith in Sam Montembeau, and I thought he played well at the beginning. But again, he's such a young goaltender that sitting on the bench for a week, 2 weeks at a time, it seemed like he came out a little rusty. And this is a good experience for him to go back to the AHL, get some playing time again. So they bring up Chris Driegger, 25 years old, has been doing this, playing this backup role in the past. So that they felt like if he has to sit for a week or 10 days or what have you, that he's going to be fine. And, you know, unlike in Columbus, you know, a couple years ago, Corpy would make the drive to Cleveland, play a game or two, and then come back and never miss a beat as Bob's backup. But you can't really do that here in Florida. Their AHL team is in Springfield, Massachusetts. So that was a nice advantage for Corpy, being able to just get some action in when he was sitting. The Panthers have gotten some decent results from the backup. Obviously, they get Driegger, gets a shutout. Montembeau has won some games. But Bob is carrying the load here. And when there's a lull in the schedule like we've had these last couple weeks, where the Panthers are only playing a couple games in a week, the backup really wasn't supposed to play. They weren't expecting Chris Driegger to play until this coming Sunday against San Jose. But instead, he gets an odd start. And then another. So that was kind of a unscheduled deal.
All right. I think we've beaten Bob to death here. Let's talk about some of the other guys on that team. When you look right at the top, no surprise, the two guys that are sitting with the most points, Jonathan Huberdeau and Alexander Barkov, two really dangerous guys. Like, every time they're on the ice, you better know where they are, right?
Oh, absolutely. That top line for the Panthers has really been, the driving force of this team. Joel Quenneville, wants to roll out four strong lines like every coach does, and really has been. You look at the Panthers, one through four in their forwards, and then they've all contributed. They've all been solid, but it's that top line. It's Sasha Barkov at center. You've got Jonathan Huberdeau and Evgeny Dadonov on the wings, and they've just been terrific. And it took Sasha Barkov a little while to get going. He was, he had some kind of injury he was fighting through. It took him 12 games to get his first goal, but I believe he's up to 9 or 10 now. So once the first one went in, it started rolling for him. And then Huberdeau has shown himself the last couple of years to be one of the, to be a legit point producer in the NHL. And Dadonov does what he does, and he gets, 60, 70 points a year. So, Panthers really like that top line. Barkov is the guy that drives this team. I mean, he's, in there on, he's a terrific defensive forward. He can score. He had 96 points last year. He's on pace for over 100 this year. So, when you talk about the Panthers, those are the guys you really have to focus on. And they just hope with the other guys that they've got, Vincent Trocheck, Brett Connolly, Frank Petrano, that you can't just bottle up that first line, because if you do, then maybe the other guys will get you too. Mike Hoffman, guys of that ilk.
Okay, now you mentioned Brett Connolly, and I wanted to ask you about a couple of the guys that were brought in besides Sergei Bobrovsky. Connolly had been in Washington, won a cup. He comes there. Also, Anton Strahlman makes the journey across the state from Tampa and joins the Florida Panthers. And then a little bit later in the game, Brian Boyle ends up going there too. So what are some of these new guys brought to the table?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think when we were looking at free agency, when the Panthers were said to be in on Bob and Brad, that was going to be, such a huge cost if they were able to pull it off. And now we know that they weren't, that Brad was always leaning towards the New York Rangers and whatever. So the Panthers went to plan B, and plan B was, okay, we can't get bread, so now we're going to fix up some of our things. The first thing they wanted to do was bring in a shutdown veteran defender. Anton Strahlman comes in, 3-year deal. They wanted to fix their, second, third line, add a forward who could play defensively, also add some points. You get Brett Connolly for 4 years. Nola Chari, centering they needed a fourth line center. With Derek McKenzie retired, Nola Chari comes in. And then, like you said, Brian Boyle. Almost a month into the season, he didn't have an offer, had been talking to the Panthers since July 1. They couldn't work out a finance deal with the Panthers being so close to the cap ceiling. And Ron Boyle still out there finally tells his agent, just make a deal, whatever the Panthers, let's just do it. And he says he did that because he liked what he saw from the Panthers. He said he liked that they were trending in the right direction. It looks like a real good team to him and a team that looks like it's going to be headed to the playoffs. We'll see how things work themselves out. But, yeah, great additions, all of them. I mean, they've all exceeded expectations. You know, there were some worries about Anton Strowman. He only played 50-something games last year, had a sports hernia surgery in the offseason at 33 years old, hasn't missed a game. You know, plays terrific defense, as we always know. It's not very offensive, but Florida gets enough offense from its blue line as it is. Achari, terrific, centering that fourth line. Brett Connolly led the team in gold, still might. I think he does, actually. So he's been a great addition. Brian Boyle, I mean, you know, like I said, didn't go to training camp with anybody, missed the first month of the season. They plug him right in on the second line as the center of the second line. Did well there till Vincent Trocheck came back, and now he's playing third, fourth line minutes, but winning a ton of faceoffs, 6-6. Gets in front of the net, bangs some people around, is a big target, you know, if you throw a shot up through traffic. So all the guys the Panthers have brought in, with the exception of Bobrovsky's statistics, have all paid off for them.
Talking with George Richards, he covers the Florida Panthers for The Athletic, and you're right, Connolly's got 12 goals. He does lead the team. Dale Tallon is the GM there, and, I mean, there aren't that many throwback guys left in the NHL, in my opinion, but Dale Tallon definitely is one, isn't he?
Yeah, Dale Tallon's old school, you know. And I think that a lot of people a couple years ago when the Panthers made this, we're going all in on analytics, I think that Dale Tallon got painted with a brush that, you know, he's too old school, that he can't, you know, be a modern guy in these modern times, you know. And I think that was unfair, a little unfair. Dale Tallon is still a guy who wants to see things, but he was definitely a guy that uses the numbers and sees some of the things that these younger guys are seeing as far as the analytics go. But, you know, he still wants, you know, defensemen who can play some defense. He still wants, you know, big forwards and stuff like that. But with the Panthers, you look at them and they've got some smaller guys too. So, you know, he's adapted to things. This isn't the Chicago Blackhawks that he built up in 2007, 2008. They're a little different, but, I think he's, you know, adjusted to the game as it's come along. And, again, he's an old school guy, but he's got some modern thoughts as well.
George, the last thing I want to ask you before we get to that game, when I come into the building, and this has been a knock on Florida, and sometimes it's justified, sometimes it's not, but Saturday night, team playing pretty well. It is Columbus. What kind of a crowd's going to be there to watch that game?
Well, you know, listen, it's probably not great. I mean, it's not going to look great on TV. I mean, obviously, when you see that middle section of the arena empty, everybody just assumes the whole arena is empty. But that's a private club area, and a lot of people don't use their seats, so it looks terrible on television. And, you know, that was a mistake they made years ago, putting it on that side of the building. But for that reason, it'll probably be about 15,000-16,000 on Saturday night, I would think. But the building holds 20, so sometimes it doesn't look full even when you've got a decent crowd in there. So, you know, it is Saturday night. It should be a decent crowd. I think a lot of people would like to see this homecoming tour, if you will, see how Bob reacts to playing against his old teammates. And, you know, there's a lot of flights. You know, Southwest Airlines, man, Columbus to Fort Lauderdale, you know. So maybe some fans up in Columbus will make the trek down and enjoy our 75-degree weather.
And I don't say it as a rip either, because I know I've had to answer that question a million times in the years that I've been here in Columbus. But one thing about Florida, and they've proven this before, when your team is good, when you're winning, it's not a problem to draw people to that building and get them behind that team, is it?
No. When this team's winning and winning consistently, and that's the key, because this team has not won consistently. This is a team that's been to the playoffs twice in the past decade and then it followed that next season with last place finishes. They just seem to be they can't handle success very well here, the Panthers. But yeah, I mean, when the team's winning, and I think as we go on through the season, I mean, they're going to see a lot of sellout crowds in February, in January and February. Right now, it's still a little early, but we'll see. I'm not making excuses. I'm not telling people how to spend their money. But people are still on a wait and see with this team. I mean, they've heard these, oh, the Panthers are good. Okay, well, we'll see. People are just kind of, seeing how things go. And, it is what it is, as our friend Sergei Bobrovsky likes to say. They only had 10,000 the other night. That's probably rock bottom for this team this year. That'll be the worst crowd of the year. And it was bad. But it was Minnesota on a Tuesday night. What are you going to do? We'll see how it goes. I think from Saturday on, the crowds are going to start growing.
Yeah, and plenty of other things to do. No offense, but I mean, you got the holidays coming up, and then you even got the Super Bowl in Miami again.
Yeah, and why do you give the Florida Panthers a 9-game homestand? I mean, that is a killer as far as crowds go, because people have so many opportunities to go to a game. You could pick and choose, and 9-game homestand, just too much. And game two of it, they only had 10,000 in the building, and tough draw. And you got the Miami Heat playing well, and there's other stuff going on. But and again, it's 80 degrees out there. If you're on the beach and it's 4 o'clock and you're like, well, should we pack up and head west toward the hockey rink, or stay here on the beach? Some people just decide to stay on the beach.
Yeah, I might be that guy on Saturday.
you're gonna be watching that clock going, should we leave? What are we doing? What time's the bus? It's gonna be painful.
Hey, how's my buddy Derek McKenzie doing there?
Derek McKenzie, retired now, an assistant coach. He's the eye in the sky. So he actually, I think, sits like maybe two spots down from you in the press box. So you guys will be able to say hello come Saturday night for sure.
I won't have to go far to chirp him.
No, you will not. You could actually probably just like look out the window and he'll be right there.
All right. Well, I'll do it, and I'll tell him that you tipped me off. So
Yeah. There you go.
George, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Look forward to seeing you, buddy.
I do too, Bob. Be good, brother.
That is George Richards. He covers the Florida Panthers for The Athletic, Miami. The Blue Jackets and the Panthers play tomorrow night, 7 o'clock face-off. 6:30 is when pregame coverage starts on the Blue Jackets radio network, and that includes CD 102.5 in Columbus. That's where you'll be able to find the game tomorrow night in Columbus, and, of course, across the radio network all throughout the state. Also, here's a little note for you. Former Blue Jacket R.J. Umberger is going to be signing autographs tomorrow morning at 10:30, you'll be able to find him at the all-new Blue Line store in Polaris. So go up and see RJ, get his autograph. That is at 10:30 at the brand-new Fox Sports Ohio Blue Line store at Polaris Fashion Place. All right, you've got plenty of things to do before tomorrow night's game. I've got plenty of things to do before tomorrow night's game. So that'll do it for today's edition of CBJ and 30, presented by Telhio Credit Union. Until tomorrow, I'm Bob McElligott saying so long.